meantime, the big issue in the midst of all of this happens to be what's happening to Christian persecution in Iran. I started this hour by talking about Saeed Abedini, who now has been moved off the murderer's ward in the prison that he is currently in. He has had some severe internal injuries. We know this. He needs surgery. He has not been granted the medical care that he needs. And we're very concerned about whether or not he's going to survive all of this. Also, I read a posting that Nagmeh, his wife, just put on her Facebook page saying that she had originally decided that she would join the protesters outside the White House on March 8th, but has decided after much prayer that no, she's not going to do that. She wants to keep her message pure and clean and simple and will not run. She knows beyond a shadow of a doubt she would have been arrested. She does not want to obscure the message at all. And in the meantime, is grateful that her husband's been moved off the ward, but wonders if they'll give him the surgery that he needs in the time that he needs it, which is a perfect segue into our conversation with Raymond Ibrahim. I so admire Raymond. He writes some of the most important pieces out there today because his focus happens to deal with religious persecution, Christian persecution in particular. He's written, if you were in my class, this would be required reading. It would be on the syllabus. The book Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. He is a Middle East and Islam specialist. He is also a fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center and an associate fellow at the Middle East Forum. His pieces show up everywhere. He lectures around the world, and we are so very, very grateful each and every time he comes to visit. Raymond, thank you so for being with us. And I want to talk about the fact that you didn't miss this Open Doors list that comes out every year talking about the greatest countries of concern and seeing where the upticks are in Christian persecution. Before we dive into that, may I ask you just to respond to the Iranian situation? There are churches being destroyed constantly in Iran, and it's simply not being picked up in the news. This is a huge story that's being completely ignored.
Sure, that's absolutely right, Janet. And first, let me just say it's always a great pleasure to be with you again. In Iran, you see the same sort of thing going on. I'm glad you mentioned it because Iran is, of course, a Shia nation. And we're often told, you know, that this persecution of Christians happens. It's sporadic. It has, you know, other elements or this and that. But here you can see, once again, a very different sect as opposed to the Sunni persecution, which happens practically everywhere else, Sunnis being the majority. And you find the same exact themes, once again, connecting the dots that, you know, both of them fundamentally are, of course, Islam. They have different divergences, but things such as putting religious minorities or what's called an infidel in their place across both of the sects and all the others. So in Iran, you see, as you were pointing out, you know, the American pastor and all sorts of other people you probably are familiar with. I think it was two men who were whipped something like 70 yes. times because they drank wine during communion, even though the authorities know exactly what that is, and they tried to use it as a pretext for drinking alcohol, so they were whipped for it. And, you know, it goes on and on because people are constantly being attracted to the Christian faith in Iran. They're always not just closing down churches, but they have a ban on using the Farsi language, the language of Persia. So they're trying to limit it to basically, you know, the indigenous languages of specific Christian groups so that the larger Iranian community don't even hear the gospel. How far they're trying to suppress it. So that sort of thing is going on in Iran. And as you're pointing out, the Open Doors list, which came out and is very eye-opening on several levels. I think the most eye-opening is I did the math, really, and they give you the top 50 nations where Christian persecution is really bad, from extreme, that would be the top maybe 13, to moderate and so forth. But in the 50 nations, fully 41 is being done at the hands of Muslims. And, you know, that speaks really for itself. I mean, I think I didn't really look at it, but that sounds to me like basically the entire Islamic world, or wherever there's Muslims living side by side with Christians. And the Open Doors listed North Korea as the first and worst, and it may well be the case, but I think it's in many ways the North Korean case is an aberration in the sense that, yes. You know, it's tied up with this one man who's basically a lunatic. It's a cult of a personality cult sort of thing, megalomaniac, and just like the USSR when it was gone and finally you know, was liberated, all those countries, Christian persecution ended. So it has a sort of temporal feeling what's happening in North Korea. But the bigger problem is these 41 countries, and they're all happening in the Islamic world, and they have nothing to do with, you know, one ruler or one government, because in all of these countries, some are so-called democracies. countries like Iraq, which is one of the worst. Others are republics. Others are Islamic republics. Others are monarchies, like our friend Saudi Arabia. And so it really has nothing to do with the leadership as it does with North Korea. And you're seeing just a brutal suppression and persecution of Christians in basically 41 out of 50 terrible countries.
That's stunning. Really with them.
Yeah.
Wow, that's absolutely stunning.
Yeah. The part that really gets me, though, is when you look at this list and you look at the absolute worst nations, like I said, there's different categories. So the extreme persecution is where it's really terrible. You could be basically killed on sight for being a Christian in these countries. And the countries that fit in that are all the countries that the United States has one way or another intervened on behalf of bringing so-called democracy to them. And so I mentioned Iraq. Iraq, 10 years ago, before the fall of Saddam, or 11 years ago, churches were protected, Christians were protected. 10 years later, more than half of that population has been decimated. They're gone. Many of them have been killed and slaughtered. I don't know the exact number, but dozens and dozens of churches have been bombed and destroyed. And, one of the worst massacres actually happened in Iraq a few years ago, where, 60 people were killed. An Al-Qaeda-linked group went in there and just started slaughtering everyone. And that is, the consequences of the U.S. going in and getting rid of a strong man and liberating it. And now you see what happened. It's the same. That's what we're doing right now with Syria. Syria, which was once known as a very moderate, pluralistic nation under Assad, who himself is, technically, you could say he's not a Muslim. He's an Alawite, which is a sect of Muslims, of Islam, but it's very secularized, at least he is in this sense. And Christians were fine, and they get along. Now, Syria is, I think, ranked fourth out of that whole list as an extreme persecution for Christians. And the same thing with Libya. Under Gaddafi, Christians were always a small amount, but their churches were protected. There were nuns there. The United States goes in, ousts him, brings, democracy. And now Libya is in the extreme persecution, and Christians have been killed, including Americans. An American teacher most recently was killed there. And Egyptian Christians have been caught and tortured because they were accused of proselytizing. And the same thing, of course, in Egypt. You got rid of a strong man, Mubarak. You put the Brotherhood in. And we all know what happened there, culminating within 1 week. The Brotherhood destroyed some 80 churches. And here's the precedent. The U.S. goes into a Muslim country, gets rid of this big, bad autocrat who's secular. And then all of a sudden, these Islamic or Islamist elements take over, and it just takes a major nosedive for Christians and all other minorities, including women in all these countries. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, Raymond, I'm so glad you just gave us that summation of what these particular countries are dealing with. And I want to point out, as you just did, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya. And I don't want our friends listening to jump to the wrong conclusion, which is, well, if we had never gotten involved in the first place, then we'd not see an uptick in Christian persecution. Because in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and also Syria, as you point out, where we are supporting the, quote, freedom fighters, whomever they might be, by the way, we see again this aggression. And by the way, I have boots on the ground in Syria that are telling me that cannibalism is taking place there against Christians and crucifixions are taking place. So it's horrific. And of course, it goes wholly ignored by the major press. But let me work through this so that we don't arrive at the wrong conclusion, which is we go in, we try to help people enjoy this idea of liberty and self-governance. And the residual becomes this uptick in Christian persecution, which would lead some to say, well, then let's not get involved in the first place. So how do we help foster the idea of liberty, which we have to believe truly beats in the heart of every human being, while at the same time not stirring and stoking a fire that ends up causing crucifixions and cannibalism?
You're absolutely right. And of course, that's a very tricky approach, how to do all this. I think what we have to understand is we're working in a different paradigm. When you say the Islamic world, you're talking about really a different civilization and a different culture. And so when you throw in democracy into the mix, you have to remember you're putting it in different ingredients. So it's not just, you throw democracy anywhere and all of a sudden you have, mini Americas everywhere. You have to understand on the ground, there's a lot of elements, religious and otherwise, that are going to somehow or other make use of democracy. And the end result's not necessarily what we're thinking, which is pluralism and democracy and all this.
Mm-hmm.
But I will continue once we're back.
Excellent. Oh, you're so good, Raymond. Thank you for that fascinating and very important conversation. You know, talking about the persecuted church is a huge issue on our program because biblically we are to pray for those being led away in chains. We do that, but we also must use the voice God has given us as well. Learning the facts help us to do both better. More after this. I sincerely hope that this program has helped you in some way today. And if it has, please tell a friend and encourage them to listen to it as well. This and other programs that have aired in the past year are freely available to listen to online at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Programs older than that are also available for purchase at moodyaudio.com. And thanks again for listening. We're visiting with Raymond Ibrahim, who is a fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's also an associate fellow at the Middle East Forum and also the author of Crucified Again. That book, by the way, stays on my desk, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. And to learn more, you can go to our website at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. By the way, Raymond writes, and his pieces go literally around the world, the Jerusalem Post, the London papers, the LA, New York, you name it. And that's because he writes with such powerfully clear eloquence. And he sounds a clarion call that I think is being woefully ignored by so many. In fact, you wrote a marvelous piece that I love the title, which is really talking about this huge issue of Christian persecution. And you call it the existential elephant in the Christian persecution room. And that's exactly what we were just talking to. Open Doors releases its report as it does annually. And the majority, the overwhelming majority of the countries happen to be Islamic countries. So before I go down a second path, I really want to finish fleshing this out because I think it's huge and I don't want us to get confused. The idea of helping people breathe freely and self-govern is something that we should all cherish. It is an inalienable right, which means it was given to all men from God, not from any government. And when we see that ability to live free crushed out, I think there is a moral a component to the United States getting involved. But there is this tandem component, Iraq and Libya and Afghanistan and Syria, where we see the uptick of Christian persecution once a benevolent dictator, and I give you Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, is removed and replaced. Then we're seeing massive destruction of Coptic churches like we've never seen them before, and Christian persecution at an all-time high. So we came up against a break, Raymond, and I would love for you to pick up exactly where we left off, because I don't want it to be an either or where we retreat because we don't want to foster persecution, but more importantly, in our bargaining and our affiliating and our growing and our influencing, why is Christian persecution or religious persecution not a part of these talks when we're trying to work with these countries?
Absolutely, Janet. Like I said, this is an excellent question and requires some length of time. I'll try to be as succinct as possible, but just some things to keep in mind. You know, you just brought up the benevolent dictators and so forth. And one thing that I don't think people in America are aware of is the dynamics of how these dictators come to be. I think the idea is that the dictators come out of nowhere, they impose their will on the people, and then the society becomes basically dysfunctional. Actually, the more I study and from what I know of that part of the world, it's basically you get something of a dysfunctional society that ends up creating the need for a dictator. And this is really what you've seen in all these nations, such as Iraq and Syria and Egypt and so forth. Again, I'm not issuing a moral value on whether that's good or bad. I'm just saying this is the reality of what happens. And you see that again because once these guys are ousted and gone, you see just total chaos run amok. But going back to the earlier point, I agree with you. I don't want it to be an either-or. And I don't want to be misunderstood as saying we got to be supportive of dictators and people in the Middle East do not deserve freedom or anything like that. But what I'm saying is as long as you have the Islamic element, it's very hard to fuse democracy into it. Remember, democracy in the West was not created in a vacuum. It was created and based on Judeo-Christian principles. And these principles are not universal or across the board or even, I would argue, innate or intrinsic to the human condition. They are part of a culture and a society, and I think they helped lead to what we have as a very functioning democracy. Now, you take the principles of democracy, which in the Middle East are just understood basically to this very day as if I have 51%, then, you know, too bad for you. We'll do what we want. And then you apply it into the Islamic paradigm, you have a lot of problems. The first thing you're going to get is the Salafis, the Wahhabis, or whatever you want to call them, the hardcore radicals who are telling you, hey, don't forget, Islam is a way of ruling. Because again, and this is why I was saying about democracy in the United States and Christianity. And you know, Christianity, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, unto God what is God's. There's always been that clear separation between church and state, at least in recent centuries. In Islam, you don't have that. Islam is a very legislative religion. This is where this idea of Sharia law comes from. It's all about, you know, do this, don't do that, do that, don't do this. So you have all these laws and rules, and then you bring democracy into it, and then you have this big clash. So, well, how do you work the two together? And this is why you always have this big clash going on. If Islamic Sharia law, according to the Quran and so many other textual sources, says, for example, that Christians must live, and Jews, and basically any non-Muslim, must live as second-class dhimmis and have to, you know, be humiliated and have to pay an extra tax, and they don't have the same rights as Muslims do, and so forth, and this is clearly in the religion, then how do you argue democracy in the sense that we understand it? And so I really think that the theological and doctrinal issues with Islam need to be exposed to the whole world and addressed and understood, and see if there can be some sort of reformation, if that's possible. And in other words, bring this out in an open, but as you pointed out, all of this is hidden, thrown under the rug, and we just think as a panacea, democracy, throw it on top, sprinkle it, and everything's going to be great and rosy, and it's not. You have to really look at how all these things interact together, and until you do, you're going to see what we're seeing, which is, you know, maybe it's well-wishing and optimistic. The United States goes, it helps, does the right thing, gets rid of the tyrant, and it helps the people, and then you see this big mess going on. And one quick thing is, Egypt was an especially eye-opening to me issue because, Mubarak was ousted, that was the people, and then the Muslim Brotherhood were voted in, even though there was clearly a lot of influence and support from the United States, but nonetheless, then the Muslim Brotherhood comes, makes life miserable for people, including, if not especially, Christians, and then the people revolt, and then this is what got me. What does the United States do, especially in the person of Ann Patterson, who was the U.S. ambassador in Egypt at the time? It starts telling people don't go and protest in the streets, and it started telling Christians not to protest. I mean, so much for, you know, revolutions and the people voicing their opinion, especially against oppressive governments like the Morsi Brotherhood was being. And so at times I don't even know, is this administration really trying to make democracy, or is it just having its own agenda with certain groups that it works with, or is it just destabilization all around the region? Yeah.
You know, and all I can do is listen to the question mark, because I think it's a question yet to be answered. But you've raised, I think, some supremely important issues on exactly what we're, if we believe in the principles of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and freedom of worship, then we have to make sure that in the removal of some of these benevolent dictators, we make sure that the people have the opportunity to gather, to believe, and to speak as they see fit. And if we don't do that, we put them in a captivity of a different form, but it's a captivity nonetheless. Raymond, thank you. Thank you for your tremendous pieces and for making us think. And I want to